I do have rather a liking for the sinister stories, actually. I think sinister trees and the legends about them are quite fascinating. There's one in my hometown of Worthing. It's first mentioned late in the 19th century, in 1878 to be exact, and it's recorded by a folklorist called Charlotte Latham. And she said that there was this oak tree in Broadwater, which is a village, on the slopes of the downs, and a story that at midnight on Midsummer's Eve, skeletons would come out from under its roots and dance round it.
We've got lots of pubs named after oak trees, particularly the Royal Oak, which is the tree that Charles II, I think it was, supposed to have hidden. Well, my recollection, that was on the 29th of May, which was also his birthday. I've got a feeling it was also the date that he was actually restored to the throne or he crowned. And there was a tune made called The 29th of May, which Ray Vaughan Williams then used in the English hymnal for a tune for All Things Bright and Beautiful. So he called it Royal Oak as well. And for many years, the 29th of May was a national day for England, and it was called Oak Apple Day.
I'm Jill Butler. I'm the ancient treescape specialist for the Woodland Trust. There are lots of historic trees with great names, and for example, the Parliament Oak is in Sherwood Forest. That's been a focal point for 8 different kings to visit it, including King John. And King John had 2 meetings under this particular oak. And in those days, they were a meeting of effectively the equivalent of our government. He would call them parleys because he spoke French, or it was a common language at the time for the aristocracy to speak French. And the French word is parley. And so that's where we get the word parliament from. And those early parliaments often were under important trees.
Now, where have I gone? Let me get my bearings.
I'm Andy Jess, and I'm the Park and Garden Manager for the National Trust at Sheffield Park Garden. Yeah, this is a Castanea sativa, which is the sweet chestnut, and it was believed to have been brought over by the Romans, and they actually used the fruit from it, the chestnut, as a means of making a crude form of bread. So they ground it into a flour, and because it's been here so long, it's now classed as a native tree. These trees themselves that we've got on this estate, we know range from 425 to 450 years old. Growing in an avenue right through the garden, they were pollarded, and the timber taken from them was used in the local iron foundries, and again it's believed that they were paid in eels as a food source. It's contorted, twisted. Often if you stare at the trunk itself, which is probably, its girth is around about 4 or 5 metres, you can start to see faces and pick out shapes. And there's a lot of dead wood in it, lots and lots of cavities, and lots of gaps in between the bark, which is ideal for things like bats. But the tree itself is physically really beautiful. It's old, it's gnarled, it's full of character, and it's really appealing. Lots of comments when people walk past it because it's high profile on the car park.
I'm Jacqueline Simpson. I am a member of the Folklore Society in London. I've written books on the folklore of certain individual counties. An interesting idea is that some particular famous tree has taken root from somebody's walking stick or staff, which he stuck in the earth. The best-known example of that is the Holy Thorn at Glastonbury. The legend about Glastonbury is that soon after the death of Jesus, one of his disciples, Joseph of Arimathea, fled to England with some followers, and they made their way across country, and they came to Glastonbury, and they climbed a hill there, which is called Weariel Hill. And as they went up the hill, Joseph said, "Oh, we are weary all." And he rammed his staff into the ground, and it promptly took a root and turned into a thorn tree, the holy thorn of Glastonbury, which is famous in legend, much attacked by Puritans, but they're still descendants of the thorn.
One of the ways that we've been trying to draw attention to how important these trees are is by encouraging people to let us know about them. And that we have developed through, initially we called it a hunt, because people were going out and looking for trees and then recording them and then putting them onto our database. But that database now holds 140,000 trees, and we've been using that inventory as our campaign with, say, for example, our recent Country Living campaign, which is about very important trees, VI trees, and asking the Secretary of State if they would consider developing a national register of trees of national importance. We have trees that are 2,000 years old, possibly 5,000 years old. You know, some of them have witnessed such important events like the sealing of Magna Carta with King John. You know, that's the Ankerwick yew. Why have these trees not got the recognition that we give to other heritage assets? And they bring us not just heritage value, they bring us biodiversity value, but they also bring us beauty.
I think we need to drop down slightly. In that.
We've come into the garden to look at the other sweet chestnuts that we've got that are still remnants of the avenues that used to run through this estate. Looking at the tree now, around about 2 metres high, there's a small metal disc which is an identifying number. We inspect these trees every 6 months and then everything goes into an electronic database. The beauty of this tree is what we've tried to do is change its location to stop people coming through. So there's no natural paths around here. It's target zone, because we do a risk assessment, so its target zone is what we call low risk, because it would just go into a leaf area under the canopy of another tree. And looking up through this tree, it's probably 6 or 7 metres tall now. It's been in major decline. Pieces are falling off it. Again, lots and lots of character. You can actually see through the main part of the trunk where it's decayed through. And we're just allowing this tree to become a veteran and just to meet a dignified end, really. One thing we are doing at the moment with the National Trust is 50 Things, which is to get young people to reconnect with nature and trees in particular. And one of those things is to climb trees. And what we've done at this garden is we've started now to put orange ribbons around the trees that we're giving permission for people to climb. So we've got historic trees, we've got trees that are vulnerable, so we keep people with a really positive message going to those trees that are safe to climb and to reconnect and engage with the trees.
Hello, my name's Ian Lamb and I'm a gardener. And I live in Brighton, two trees in Preston Park, closest to us. I'm pretty sure that they're the two oldest elms in Britain. I've also been told they're possibly the two oldest elms in Europe. Like all those ancient trees, they're hollow in the middle. They're not very tall. You always expect an old tree to be a really tall tree, but in these cases they're not. But the girth of the trunk is enormous. There's a number of other elm trees within in the park. And when my nephew was younger and I was trying to get him to walk home and he was a bit slow in walking, I said, we've got some magic trees in this park. And if you walk in a full circle around the whole tree, a magic door opens in them. And then you can go inside the tree. So we walked up through the park, walking around all the trees to see if a magic door would open in them, until we got to the Preston Park Twins. And we walked around until he found the gap in the thing. And I went, "Is this? I think we found a magic tree. The door's open. Shall we go in?" And he went, "No," because he was actually quite frightened at the time. But now he knows that they're not really magic, although we still call them the magic trees. We do go inside them when we go down to the park.